Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight is Scott Baker, and hopefully this thing will be dialing his number. I don't hear it ringing. There we go. Hello, Scott. This is Mac.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Doing all right.
All right. So you can hear me okay, right?
Yep. You can hear me?
Yeah, and I can hear you. So we should be good to be on the air. All right.
Great.
So have you always wanted to be in the filmmaking business?
Yeah. I mean, I think... you know, ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be an actor. And then I think that that kind of was always something that I had wanted to do.
So it started when you were a kid.
Yeah. When I was little, I was in some, some like the plays in school and like church plays and community theater and things like that. And then at some point picked up my dad's VHS camcorder and started shooting stuff with my friends that just kind of turned into, you know, liking being behind the camera, you know, writing stuff to shoot, and then the act of shooting it and editing it and those sorts of things. Kind of as I practiced doing that more and more, I kind of fell in love with that, and that kind of became where I kind of gravitated towards.
So do you still enjoy acting, or is that kind of like wavering a little bit?
I still really do enjoy acting. I don't really, I don't put myself out there for roles. It's, you know, the business of being an actor is crazy, and I feel like it's you have to dedicate quite a bit to that. You know, it's headshots and reels and going to auditions and things like that. And for me, it's not as much what I want to be doing. You know, every once in a while I find myself acting in something, either it's like something that I'm making as a director or something. I'll be like, oh, I'll play this little part in it. Yeah. Or it's, you know,
is doing a project and they're like, hey, why don't you, do you want to play this role in this thing? And, you know, so sometimes, you know, stuff comes up and I'll act in it, but it's not really what I've been, you know, putting my energy into as far as, like, you know, going to auditions and stuff like that.
So really what you enjoy the most is, like, the camera work. Is that right? Are you still there?
Hello?
Hello, Scott, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here. Sorry, I don't know, something happened on my phone. I lost you there for a second.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I kind of lost you, too. So so is the camera work your favorite thing to do?
Yeah, I mean, I really love directing and you know, being on set. And as, like my journey into filmmaking has kind of been learning to do a little bit of everything along the way. And at some point I picked up, you know, like I kind of taught myself how to use cameras and learning, you know, the basics of cinematography and things like that. And at some point I picked up a Steadicam because I wanted that in my own projects. And that sort of became a thing that I could do on the side to make money and also, you know, gain experience and be on set and things like that. So while I was working on projects that I wanted to direct before I was, you know, before I could get paid as a director, it was like, okay, I can work on set doing camera work. And so that kind of became a thing. And yeah, I enjoy that a lot. Especially doing the Steadicam is something that for me is a lot of fun. I love the being able to move the camera around like that. It's after doing it for some years, it kind of becomes an extension of your body, in a sense where, you know, I don't have to think about what I'm doing. I just think about where I want the camera to be, and I can make the camera go places and do things. And it's sort of, it's almost like a dance in a way, working with the actors and then the sets and making the camera move around. I have a lot of fun doing that. I really do enjoy it.
Well, yeah, and it is a type of choreography to be able to do that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Well, why don't you tell us about Vegan Cannibals?
Oh, okay. Well, that's Vegan Cannibals is the production company that I started years back with my friend Philip. When we first started making our own projects, we were doing a horror comedy kind of thing, sort of Evil Dead type thing, zombies and that kind of thing, dark humor. So that was the production company that we had started, and kind of just kept that name because it's something that was funny and kind of always drew some interest from people when they heard it. They always wanted to know more about it, or you know, where the name came from. So that's kind of like kind of about the attitude in films. You know, I like horror and sci-fi and fantasy and things like that, and you know, dark comedies, sort of the my kind of sensibility in filmmaking is that sort of stuff. And so, yeah, that's kind of where that comes from.
Yeah, well, I like the name. I think it's interesting, so.
Uh-huh.
Now, this doesn't have to do with your film work, but tell us mm-hmm. about being a Peace Corps volunteer.
Oh, yeah. Well, even though I had always, like, in the back of my mind, wanted to be a filmmaker, like an actor, and then you know, working in movies and stuff like that. When I was younger, it was something that, while I had the desire to do it, I didn't know anybody who was working in the film industry. I didn't know a path to get that done. And so when I had opportunity to go to college, it wasn't like, oh, I could go to film school or I could get a degree in film. That wasn't something that I really thought was an option. So I got a degree in history and was kind of on a path to get, you know, to go into education and like be a teacher. I felt like I had this obligation to, you know, get like a real job, you know, be a teacher or a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, you know? So I went down that path. And when I graduated with my degree in history and was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life post-college, I looked at the Peace Corps as a way to you know, to do something. And so I had studied like Cold War, Soviet US history. That was kind of my focus, and I'd started learning Russian. And so joined the Peace Corps. I said, hey, I want to go somewhere where they speak Russian. And so they sent me to Turkmenistan, which is an old Soviet Union country they're in Central Asia. It's out there by Kazakhstan and Iran and Afghanistan. It's out in that part of the world. And because it's a because it used to be part of the Soviet Union. There's a lot of Russians there, and you know, most everybody there speaks Russian. So that was a place for me to bring my Russian language skills. And so I was there from 2000 to 2001. I was working as an English teacher, and I was like working with English teachers there, like helping them become better English teachers, trying to like, you know, give them, you know, resources and like help them with their English, but also maybe, you know, help them with some resources. So maybe they could become better English teachers. And I help facilitate with one of the other volunteers, help facilitate a sort of multimedia center for them, like in one of their schools that had like internet and a DVD player so that they could watch American movies and you know, learn English, things like that. And then I was out there during September 11th. And so when the September 11th attacks happened, they brought us all back from there because, like, you know, we had shared a border with Afghanistan, and they were worried that, you know, maybe something might happen that we were in danger. So we all got before our time was up, and so I just got kind of dropped back into the United States without much warning, you know. But my time out there was pretty amazing, you know, going and doing something like that right out of college really opens your eyes to you know, people in other parts of the world and how they live, and just that sort of cross-cultural experience. And so, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, I learned a lot about other people in the world. I learned a lot about myself. I don't know, you know, hopefully I'd like to think that I helped some people out there. You know, obviously, you know, you never know what kind of impact you have on other people, but hopefully I had some impact there. And yeah.
No, that's a very cool story. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Now, we can get into some of your film work. In 2008, you did, and now I even like the name of this, but you were a writer, director, producer, editor, The Diary of Anne Frank of the Dead, which was a short.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's like a very typical vegan cannibal productions. That's that sort of horror comedy sort of thing. And that was at that time, so 2008, there was a lot of zombie movies. It was sort of like the zombie movie resurgence that was happening. And at the same time, there was also like a lot of World War II movies were being made. One of the things was I was just like, I like the zombie movies because I like horror films, and in general I like zombie movies, but I felt like it was just getting so saturated. And the same thing with like World War II movies. I felt like World War II movies were every week there was a new World War II movie coming out where, you know, the brave Americans were going to kill the Nazis. And while that's a great thing, I just felt like it was just being oversaturated and overdone, and just not, you know, just wasn't, you know, I was like, can we please make some other kind of movie? Got together with some of the other, you know, filmmaker friends that you know, we had been doing, you know, vegan cannibals, just, you know, making projects. And so we decided to do kind of a mashup of those two genres of film. And, it's kind of a like a fake trailer in a way. So it, when you watch it, it looks like you're watching a trailer to a film, but you know, the whole film isn't there. We shot little snippets of scenes and edited together to kind of have this feel like you're watching a trailer. It's sprinkled with a little bit of the gore and the things that you'd see in the zombie movies, but also a little bit of the satire and the tongue in cheek and the sort of thing like, you know, maybe this movie's too offensive. Like, if you actually made this movie, you know, it might be something that kind of goes over the line. You know, you imagine, you know, zombies in a concentration camp, and you're like, wow, I don't know if we could actually make that movie. That might be a little too insensitive to people. But you know, obviously we didn't show any of that kind of stuff. We were just sort of like walking that line of the satire and things like that. And so we ended up so we made that, and it turned out pretty good for the, you know, it was all obviously a super small budget. It was just, you know, us and the gear and the stuff that we had. We didn't, you know, like, we didn't have a budget to do anything. It was just us trying to be creative with the resources we had at hand. And then, you know, getting into quite a few film festivals. You know, we got into like Dragon Con. They had a film festival. We won the best short film festival there. And, you know, a couple other horror film festivals we got into and stuff like that. And it played pretty well. You know, a lot of people really liked it, and it was, you know, and then we also got, when we eventually put it up on YouTube, just for people to watch, we got some people who, you know, said that they were offended and stuff like that. But that's sort of, that was kind of the point. Like, you know, when you make something like, oh, this, if someone actually made this movie, yes, it would be offensive, but that's the point of the trailers, to kind of show, you know, to show that and sort of poke fun at the thing. Yeah.
Yeah, well, some people just get offended at anything and everything.
Yeah. Well, there's actually, you know, a couple of the actors that were in the film were Jewish, and they thought it was hilarious, and they know this is good fun. You know, I mean, we didn't, you know, when you watch it, like, Anne Frank is the hero of the story, and she lives, and
right.
You know, she becomes like a superhero kind of thing. You know, and so it's. You know, to me, it's kind of empowering. It's not, you know, it's not insulting to the story of who she is and stuff like that. You know, it's kind of like that film they ended up doing years later, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. You know, that kind of thing. You know. So
yeah, I liked that movie.
Oh yeah, I did too. I thought that movie was fun. I mean, like, you know, like you got to know what you're getting into when you go and watch it. Like, and then that's the same thing. It's like, you know, you watch Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I know this is going to be a silly, over the top movie that is not trying to be true to history. It's having some fun. And that's the same thing. It's like, you see a title like The Diary of Anne Frank of the Dead, and you know, it's going to be kind of an over the top movie, and it's
right.
Having some fun with some serious material.
Yeah, what really kills me is when people say silly stuff like, "Oh, well, this is silly." Yeah, okay, you didn't notice the title of the film. I used to work at Blockbuster. Okay, and right like around the time that Edward Scissorhands came out. And so when it came out and it was on, you know, VHS, and it was a big deal. Everybody wanted to see it. We had something like 60 copies of it in our store. And so this one person had watched it and brought it back and said, "This was the silliest movie I ever saw." And I said, "Well, it's supposed to be silly." "Well, I All like right. to watch serious movies." And I said, "Okay, well, see, the thing is, if you see a film that has the title Edward Scissorhands and you know it's about a guy with scissors for hands, you know it's not a serious movie."
Yeah. I heard people say, I really wanted to like Dumb and Dumber, but it was just so stupid. I was like, like, it's got the word dumb in the title twice.
I mean, no, I said about Dumb and Dumber, well, you know, it's okay. It's not for me.
Yeah.
But I didn't say anything about it being dumb, because of course it's supposed to be dumb.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the Three Stooges. People made fun when they made that Three Stooges movie. And people were complaining about that, saying how dumb they were. And did you ever watch the Three Stooges? Evidently not. They were morons.
Right,
that
right.
was the whole point.
Yeah, yeah. It's called Three Stooges, not a Three Professors. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really hilarious when they played doctors. Like, how did they get their degree?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off and take away from your time.
That's all right.
So, in 2011, you were sound editor. You did digital effects, camera operator, wrote the story, director, producer, editor, cinematographer, everything but the Partridge in the Pear Tree, the coach, the bandits, the mask. And that was a short, but tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. So that was a part of like a series of films that I did for the 48-hour film project. And if you're not familiar with the 48-hour film project, the idea is that it's like a contest they'll have in different cities, and everybody meets up on Friday, and you get you draw like a category or like a genre of film from a hat. So you get, you know, horror or comedy or romance or Western. And you have exactly 48 hours to go write your film, shoot it, edit, and then turn the film in. And then it's like a contest where they'll show all the films, and then people vote on the films that they like the best, and you know, you can get prizes and stuff like that. But you know, really it's just about getting together with some people and having fun and, you know, making a film on a weekend. And, you know, a lot of times what happens is people with the no budget or extremely low budget films, you know, sometimes you'll help some people make a film and then it'll never get finished and you never get to see it. Right. And so the great thing about the 48-hour film is that, you know, at the end, you're going to have a film. While, you know, you're making compromises because you don't have all the time in the world, at least at the end, you're going to have something to show for it. And you're kind of, it's kind of like batting practice. You know, if you're a baseball player, you know, swinging the bat in the batting cages, you know, you're like working on your craft as a filmmaker and maybe learning some new things and meeting some new people. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, you know, maybe you have something good to show for it. And, So I did a series of those, the coach, the bandits, and the mask. We got Western, and so we did sort of a Western Mad Max kind of thing. And that was one where it was like, why I've got like so many credits on that one is because it was like I pretty much did everything myself except for be one of the actors. You know, it was like I was like a one-man crew. I shot everything and did all the editing and, you know, did the whole Magilla on it. But the other ones that I did, I was able to work with some other vegan cannibal friends with, and like Rationed was one of the most successful ones. We ended up winning that year. We got the best film, and then it went on to like the international competition, and we got like third place in the international competition, and it got to show at Cannes Film Festival, and I ended up entering it into some other film festivals, and it got accepted into some other film festivals, I've participated in the 48-hour film project like 10 times in different capacities. Sometimes it's like a writer, director, producer, and other times I've just edited projects, and other ones I've just been the cinematographer on it. They're fun to do. You know, it's like if one of them is happening and I know someone's one together and I'm not doing anything that weekend, then it's fun to get together with friends and make a film. And it's always a fun time. And I feel like, you know, I've met some cool people and had good experiences, and some of them, like Rationed, was one where it kind of inadvertently led to me getting onto bigger projects because people see the film and and like, oh, I really like that. I like what you've done. I want to work with you on your next thing kind of stuff. So, yeah, that was that's what the that one was about.
Okay, cool. Now, in 2015, you were a Steadicam operator on a film that I know several people from this film, Benjamin Troubles. So tell us about working on that.
Yeah, so that was, I got on that project through, Manu Interamy. I had met him through my friend Prince Bagdasarian, who's also a filmmaker. And I was helping Prince shoot some projects and, ended up meeting Manu on one of those. And that was when I had just written like an early draft on Fifth Passenger and, you know, met Manu and was talking to him and found out that he had been on Star Trek Voyager. And there was a part in Fifth Passenger that I thought, might be good for him. And so I sent him over the script and, we ended up, you know, keeping in contact as that movie was sort of starting to move forward, and he knew that I did Steadicam, and so he was the lead in this film Benjamin Troubles, and they had shot pretty much the whole film, but there was a couple days that they needed to do pickup on where they just needed a couple shots here and there to finish the film, and so he passed my name along to them when they were looking for somebody to do the Steadicam on that. So mm-hmm. I want to say I only did Steadicam on that for like, oh, I think one day, maybe 2 days. Mm. It was quite a while ago, but I want to say either 1 or 2 days I did Steadicam on that project. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that was a really good movie too, by the way, for people who haven't seen
it. It was a fun one.
So since you already mentioned it, we'll just go ahead and talk about it, the Fifth Passenger.
Sure.
Now, with that, you also acted in it, and, of course, you wrote it, directed it, and produced it, and you were the Steadicam operator. And now this is another really great movie, and I know several people in this movie as well. So tell us about Fifth Passenger.
Yeah, well, that's, the first big project that I had the opportunity to, direct. It was a story that I came up with and co-wrote with Morgan Laraya, and we produced it together. It's a sci-fi thriller about five people in an escape pod after their spaceship blows up. So it's this lifeboat in space, and it was this script that, you know, as I was putting it together, I hadn't gotten the opportunity to like really direct a feature film, and so I didn't know that it was going to be the film I was going to make, as far as like, okay, this is the first film I'm going to get a chance to make, but it was something that I had wanted to do. I love sci-fi, I love thrillers and, you know, dark films and things like that. And so it was like, this is the movie that I want to make if I ever get a chance to make a movie. As Morgan and I were working on the project, like I said, after we had the script done, Manu was somebody that we had gotten the script to, and because he had worked on Star Trek, he knew some other Star Trek actors, and that was kind of appealing as far as a way to get some sort of traction with the film, is having Star Trek actors attached to it, because it's, you know, familiar faces for that fan base. And we shot a proof of concept trailer, very similar to like what we had done with The Diary of Anne Frank and the Dead. We shot what looks like the trailer for a film that didn't exist. Just shoot some scenes and you edit it together in a way that it looks like a trailer. And the idea with that for Fifth Passenger, at least, was to show people, okay, this is what the film is about. This is kind of what the film looks like. Like this is the tone of the film, and also to show what we could do as far as production value. Like okay, we're just gonna spend a couple thousand dollars and, you know, get together some good actors and get together this cool looking spaceship set and some costumes and get some visual effects and show what we can do with like a little bit of money, but with a lot of effort, and then hopefully use that to raise some money later on. And I had been working with this other filmmaker, Neil Johnson, and he's done a slew of really cool, really low budget science fiction films. And so he goes in and makes his own spaceship sets and you know, a very similar kind of thing where he'll write and direct and shoot and does a lot of the editing and does a lot of the visual effects himself. Very much this do-it-yourself filmmaking thing, but his thing is about doing sci-fi films, so he makes these little spaceship sets himself. And so I helped him. I helped him on one of his films. I helped him build the sets, and I did some Steadicam for him. And in exchange for that, he let us come on and use his sets for a couple of days, and that's how we were able to shoot the proof of concept for Fifth Passenger. And cool. Yeah, and you know, the trailer turned out really well, and we showed it to people, and they liked it. But it was still, you know, it was hard going trying to get money raised for it. You know, even though we had Manu and Tim and a couple other actors that were, you know, had said that they would be in the film, it still was hard raising the money for it. So at some point we decided to go to Kickstarter, and at that point I'd been working with Mark Zickri on Space Command, which was another you know, really low budget science fiction film, and he had raised some money off of Kickstarter to do it, and he had some, you know, actors that had been in Star Trek and Babylon 5 and some of these other known science fiction projects, because Mark is a writer who had, you know, written for some of these shows and similar things. I helped Mark build the sets for Space Command. I did some camera work for him, and you know, in exchange, we worked out a deal that if we got enough money to shoot Fifth Passenger, that we could use his sets, you know, for the shooting of the film. And, you know, obviously we would redress them so that they worked for our film and didn't look like we were just, you know, using his spaceships and stuff like that. And so, you know, we got a handful of really good actors together that had been in Star Trek shows, and Tim Russ and Manu and Marina Sirtis, and eventually we were able to get Doug Jones, and we ran a Kickstarter campaign, and the Star Trek fan base was really cool, and got a lot of people that helped us out, and we raised a good chunk of money for us to get into production on the film, and we started shooting the film. And it was this crazy thing where, even though we had raised a good chunk of funds, we kind of knew going in that it wasn't going to be enough to finish what we were doing. We knew at some point we'd probably just like run out of money and then have to go back to trying to raise money, or, you know, that sort of thing. And then at the last minute, when we were in the middle of production, we had a couple investors that came in and gave us gave us enough funds to get us through production, to be able to shoot everything without having to stop. And I think a lot of that goes to that we were already shooting. You know, people see a lot of people and hear a lot of people talking about projects they want to do and say, oh yeah, if I get this money, I want to do this thing and all that. And while that sounds good, when you actually see somebody out there doing the thing, shooting the film, it's like, oh, I can see they're serious. They are actually doing it. They're out there shooting the film, and it gave us a lot of, what the word is, like credence to what we were saying we wanted to do. We were actually shooting the film, and people see that the train is moving, and they want to get on board and be a part of it. So, you know, we were fortunate enough to have some people that came in and invested at the 11th hour to keep the lights on and allowed us to finish. And then we, you know, spent a couple of years in post-production editing and visual effects, and along the way raising the rest of the money that we needed for those things. And then when the film was done, we found Epic Pictures to be our distributor, and they helped get us into some theaters, and we got like into Redbox and all the major streaming platforms and things like that. And so now it's out in the world, and we had a pretty fun premiere at the Chinese theater here in Hollywood. So now the film is out there, and people can see it on, you know, Amazon, and there's a couple other, say Tubi and a couple other places you can watch it for free. But Amazon is what you know most people have and can watch it on.
Yeah. Well, we had watched that at a family gathering. Of course, it was my idea, and everybody loved it. Not one person had anything negative to say about it. It was a pretty big family gathering at the time.
Uh-huh.
We haven't had a big family gathering like that in a long time because of COVID, but at that time it was.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, oh, you know, they were loved the explosions, and some of the people didn't like the romance part, but it was short, and so they were able to get over it quickly. But the thing that everybody was saying, including myself, it had everything in it. It had sci-fi, it had explosions, it had a little bit of romance, it had a little bit of bromance, it had a little bit of everything in it. So it's basically for everybody. Not to mention a little bit of horror as well.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I mean, it was, an original idea in the sense, you know, I didn't directly take the concept from anything, but it definitely borrowed elements from some of my favorite films, you know, Alien and John Carpenter's The Thing and Event Horizon and various episodes of like The Twilight Zone and a little bit of Star Trek, a little bit of Star Wars, a little bit of like, just, you know, when you're a writer and a filmmaker, you know, you have these films that influence you along the way, and you can't help but kind of give little nods to some of those films and the stuff you do.
Right.
And, I feel very fortunate to have met the different people along the way to help me put the project together. And, we tried to make the best thing that we could make, you know, out of it. And it's tough on a low budget. And I was just having this discussion with somebody the other day about like time and money, how they go with like filmmaking is you always use up what's there and wish there was more, you know, like if you've got,
right,
if you've got 2 hours to do something, you're gonna use up those 2 hours and wish you had 3 hours. But if you had 3 hours, you'd use up those 3 hours wishing you had four. And that's the,
right,
you know, the same thing with money and budgets on films is like, you know, we had X amount of money to make the film, you know, and at the end of the day, I was like, man, I wish, we definitely spent all that money. I wish we had two times that amount of money. But then if we had two times about that money, we would have spent that all and wished we had two times that amount of money, you know.
Right.
And sci-fi is definitely unique. This kind of, sci-fi in space is definitely unique, where you've got certain things like VFX and, you know, spaceships and costumes and props that you don't necessarily have to, you don't have in most other types of films, you know, even with like the costumes, you know, a lot of films you can be just like, okay, well, you know, you're wearing jeans and a t-shirt, you know, it's like, well, we can't have actors who are in a spaceship in the future wearing jeans and a t-shirt. You have to have, you know, custom costumes made for all these people. And, you know, Deb Hartwell was our costumes person, and she did fantastic work with the very small amount of resources that we were able to give to her for the film, and feel super, super fortunate that we had her on board, because she really kicked butt for us and got us what I feel were, you know, really good costumes for what we had to work with. And, you know, cause you want to try to make every little thing believable, and it's tough,
right?
You know, with like sci-fi, cause you gotta kind of invent things, you know, like, oh, what does a space suit look like? And, you know, you don't just want to like take a suit that was from some other movie or something else. You know, we want something that kind of looks unique to our world, and but then it's also got to look like it's functional, and, you know, so it's
right.
it's a lot of little ins and outs and all that kind of stuff. And I feel as like a director and a producer, I like to bring on people who are artists and let them do what they do, you know, say, hey, this is generally what we want to do for this, but I'll leave you to use your artistic abilities to come up with, you know, how you think it's best to make that thing happen. And I was really pleased, whether it was the, you know, the set designs and the costumes and the music and the, you know, all those kind of things, really, really great artists came together and gave a lot for the very little that we were able to pay them, you know. But I think that's the key in a project like this, is getting people that are on board for more than just the money, you know.
Right.
It's tough, because it is, you know, it's show business, it's the film industry, it's about, you know, people, no matter where you're at on, you know, making a film, you want to be able to feel like you're getting paid what you're worth, so that you can pay your rent and your bills and stuff like that. But also, you know, there's something about having like artistic fulfillment when you're working on a project, and you know, feeling like, oh, I made something that I'm proud of, and I had fun doing it, and this is the kind of thing, you know, that I want to work on. And, you know, where you may bring on somebody to do a certain job on a romantic comedy, I'm not really excited, because romantic comedies don't really get me excited. But, oh, we get to, you know, work on stuff on a spaceship and work with these Star Trek actors, and like, that's kind of stuff that, you know, certain people get really excited about, and they're willing to go that extra mile for maybe not the extra dollar, but just because they're so excited about it and they want to be a part of it. And I feel like that was something that we definitely benefited from, was, you know, there's a lot of people who came aboard that were excited to work with Marina Sirtis, or they were excited to work with
right.
Armin Shimerman and Tim Russ and stuff like that, you know. And, I mean, even for me, it was like the first day that Marina Sirtis was on set, I almost felt a little fanboy, you know, about like this. I remember being in high school watching Next Generation, and, you know, me and all my buddies were like, oh, wow, she's pretty. And, you know, that kind of stuff was like, I just remember, you know, I just remember watching Next Generation and, you know, having that as a sort of like a show that influenced me. And at that time, the idea that, oh, one day I'm going to be on set working with some of these actors was like, you know, the sort of thing, like if somebody had gone back in time and told me that, I'd be like, oh yeah, sure, whatever. But, you know, here I am, and Marina's on set, and she's getting her hair done and in the makeup chair, you know, and we're talking about the costumes and what her scene's going to be and stuff like that. And I think that was the only time when I felt like maybe like a little bit nervous, you know. It's like, okay, I want to impress her. I didn't want her to think that we were, this little rinky-dink film operation. You know, I wanted her to feel comfortable, and you know, like obviously she's been on Star Trek, and she knew that she was coming on board a low-budget project, but I didn't want her to think, you know, that we didn't know what we were doing or that we weren't professional or prepared and all that. And it was really, you know, all the people that were working on the film were very professional, and we had all the preparations made, and for the resources we had, everything ran really smoothly. And that's a credit a lot to like Tim Gugliardo, who was my line producer and my first AD. And, you know, he ran the production crew in that sense, and as far as the behind the scenes, you know, making sure that there was food there, and all the stuff as far as making the production happen, you know, making sure that all the scheduling was right and all that kind of stuff. So that's definitely like, you know, people like that behind the scenes making sure everything ran smoothly. Really was a huge benefit to having the film come out as well as it did.
Oh, it did. It came out beautifully. I thought it was really great. And by just looking at it, you can't really tell that it's a low budget. With some films, you can tell. But with your film, you can't tell it's a low budget.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah, I think it's tough, like I said, with the science fiction, especially because, people watch stuff like Star Trek and Star Wars, and they have an expectation, you know, as far as like, oh, this is what the visual effects should look like, and this is what the costumes and the sets and all that kind of stuff looks like. And obviously, we didn't have that kind of money. We didn't even have anything close to that kind of money. You know, like I joke around and I said, well, we had, like, you look at like the Chris Pine, you know, Star Trek movie, and I was like, well, we had their crafty catering budget, you know, the amount of money that they spent to feed everybody. That was how much we spent on our entire movie, probably, you know. So, you know, I think we did a really good job with what we had. But if you come into our film, you know, expecting that it's going to be Star Trek or it's going to be Star Wars or something like that, you know, maybe you might be a little bit disappointed. And you know, with any film, you know, you go on IMDb or you go on any of these sites that review movies, you get, you know, people who give it one star, people who give it a bad rating. Oh, this is just a cheap, low budget movie or something like that, you know, but, I think that just kind of comes with the territory of being any kind of artist, you know, as an artist, you make something and you put it out to the world and you make yourself vulnerable and you say, hey, this is me. This is this thing I've done. And then some people are going to like it and some people aren't going to like it, you know, and it doesn't matter how good it is. There's always going to be people who aren't going to like it and are going to have something nasty to say about it. And maybe it's because, you know, that person doesn't understand the process, or maybe they're just the kind of person who just has something nasty to say about everything. You know, but then there's also, I think legitimate criticisms of it. And, you know, I want to learn and grow and become a better filmmaker. And so I read a lot of the reviews, whether they were good or bad or terrible or whatever, because there were some things that, you know, I watched the movie and I know, oh, it's not perfect. It needs this. And maybe we could have done this better, or if we had more time or we had more money or something, we could have fixed this thing or fixed that other thing. And, so, you know, like I said, I want to grow and be a better filmmaker. So I'm going to at least try to acknowledge some of the criticisms if they're valid and, you know, maybe next time make a better film. But you know, I feel at the end of the day, you know, I do feel satisfied that, you know, there's people like you and the people that helped with the Kickstarter campaign seem overall satisfied with the film, and they're happy. The people who, invested in the film, seem happy with the film. And I think that's at the end of the day is like, with any kind of art, did you reach somebody? Did you reach a portion of your audience and they watched your film or looked at your piece of art or read your book and we're glad they spent the time doing that, you know? So.
Yeah, and you did a really good job on it. We've got less than 10 minutes now. Believe it or not, that time flies by. So if you were done talking about that, we'll move on to like maybe some of your stuff you have coming out. We may only get a chance to talk about one or two of them, depending on what you can say, because depending on how far they are in the process. One that I picked out was, because I like the name, of course, and you were a Steadicam operator, or you are, because it's supposed to be filming, Beginning of the End. That's a short. Can you tell us anything about that?
Honestly, I don't know. I'm drawing a blank as to what project that is. You know, one of the things about being a Steadicam operator is sometimes they'll need me for just one day on a project, you know, and so I'll get called and I'll show up and I'll just like shoot a couple of scenes on something and then I go home and then they spend the next 2 weeks or a month working on the project and I only worked on it for one day and so sometimes I don't necessarily remember. And sometimes the names of the films change too. Yeah.
That happens. And then you also have that sometimes the stuff on IMDb isn't always correct. So you may not even have been in the film. Well, another one that I picked. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say there's one I know that I can talk about because it just came out. It's called Deathcember. And it's a horror anthology, a Christmas themed horror anthology. So it's a bunch of short films that all have the same theme. And so it's like a feature length film, but it's just made up of a bunch of short films. And so the film is called Deathcember, and it just came out in November. So It's on Amazon and stuff like that. I'm not sure if you have to rent it or if it's free with Prime, but I got to be the cinematographer for one of the pieces called Getting Away From It All. And it's about a kind of a bah humbug guy who goes up to a cabin that gets this like Airbnb cabin up in the woods during Christmas to get away from everything because he just wants to get away from Christmas and encounters a dark, deadly surprise up there in the woods. It was directed by Pollyanna McIntosh, who is one of the actors from The Walking Dead. And I met her on this film Darling that I got the opportunity to be the camera operator and Steadicam operator on, and she was the writer and director and lead actress in that film. And that's another fun, dark, twisted film. Darling was really something amazing to work on. But I met her through that project, and so she got an opportunity to direct one of the segments for Deathcember. And so she called me up because she wanted me to be the cinematographer on that. So her and I and some other people went up to this cabin and got to shoot that segment for it and had a blast doing it. It's a bloody little funny horror piece. I haven't gotten a chance to watch all the other shorts that are part of the anthology yet. I had planned on doing that this Christmas. Sitting down with the family to watch a good horror film, that's something that I'm really proud of, that I got the opportunity to work with Pollyanna and also to be you know
cinematographer on that one. So if you get a chance to see December, you know, it's out there.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. I'm trying to think of, because I've heard of it. Barbara Crampton, she's in that, isn't she? Maybe not in the segment you did.
Yeah, definitely not in the segment I did, but possibly in one of the other segments, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, like I think there's 24 different short films in that. So yeah, there's a lot of different pieces in there. But yeah.
Ah. Yeah, cool. Okay, actually, you filled up the time pretty well because we're down to like 4 minutes. If there's anything that you want to go over quickly, you can. If there's another one you want to go over quickly, that would be okay.
I got to spend this last week working with Tim Russ on a couple projects. Ever since we shot Fifth Passenger, him and I have become pretty good friends, and he directs a lot of projects, and whenever he directs something, he calls me up and give me Scotty Baker on the camera. Like he always wants to have me out there. Him and I have a good relationship, and so we got to work on some parts of the, there was Star Trek Renegades, and then they had a spinoff just called Renegades, and now they've got another spinoff of Renegades that's called Aminara that stars Nichelle Nichols, and it's all about her character, and so we're shooting the sort of the backstory of who her character is, and so we was on the set with him this last week working on that project with some really great actors and shooting on some spaceship sets and everything like that. So now it's going to be a little bit of a while before that one actually comes out because we still have some more to shoot on it that we'll be shooting on into next year. But definitely excited about that. Anytime I can work on sci-fi projects like that or work with Tim Russ, I'm always excited. So.
Well, cool. We'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, now we're down to like 2.5 minutes. So is there anything else that you would like to say in closing?
I'd just like to, you know, thank you for having me, taking the time to talk with me and stuff like that. One thing we got going on right now is called Virtual Trek Con, and it's something that I've been doing with Ryan T. Husk and sort of filling the void that, you know, none of us been able to go to conventions because of the quarantine, and we're doing a special right now because it's winter. We're calling it the 12 days of content, and it, Star Trek convention style panels over Zoom and on YouTube with actors and writers and directors and makeup artists and everybody who's been involved in Star Trek along the way. And so if you go to virtualtrekcon.com, you can check out the schedule and be a part of that. So if you love Star Trek, that's the place to be right now. So, but
cool.
thanks for having me, and I hope you have a good holiday season, and everybody out there has a great holiday season, and making 2021 something special for everybody. You know, when all this craziness clears away, we can get back to doing what we do. You know.
Yeah. I want to say to the listeners, my guest has been Scott Baker, very, very good filmmaker. Watch some of his things that we've talked about. Look on his IMDb. In IMDb, he's under Scotty Baker. So if you go to look him up, that's how you find him on IMDb. Thank you very much, Scott, for being on the show, and stay safe and have a good night and enjoy your holidays.
Thanks. You too, Mac.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.